Hi everyone and welcome to the FinTech Germany Award podcast enabled by Financial Times. I am Alexandra, your host today, and we will provide you with insights on the awards, our participating startups, and latest trends in the industry. I'm recording today remotely with Katharina Lüth, Managing Director and Chief Client Officer, and with Raisin since 2014. Hello, Katharina. Nice to have you here today.
Hello, Alexandra. Pleasure to be here.
Super. Before we start into our conversation today, and I guess it's going to be super interesting for many of our listeners, I just wanted to recognize your company with our awards and how many times you have won them already. So Raisin has won first time 2017 as Weltsparen, which was one of the first brands and products. And then later on in 2020 and 2021. So you are one of the few fintechs that have won the awards several times. And I'm super happy to have the conversation with you today. Before we go into the company a little more into detail, could you please say something about you and your vita and what brought you to that amazing company?
Yes. So indeed, I've been with Raisin a decade now, almost exactly to date. So it's been a ride and maybe also quite unusual, but shows what a great company Raisin is that I've lasted this long year. In my previous life or my first job, I was in management consulting at McKinsey for roughly 8 years, basically working for banks and other financial institutions. I have a very classic business studies background, so I studied international business in Germany, the States, and Mexico. And As so many people do, at some point you ask yourself, do you want to permanently stay in management consulting or do you want to shift gears? For me, the answer was I wanted to also see something else. And that timing coincided extremely nicely with Raisin. They launched, I would say, roughly half a year before I joined them in the German market. I've known all of the co-founders also from my previous career. So they were also all at McKinsey. So
the McKinsey network.
The McKinsey still network works. Yes. So especially Thomas and I have worked together extensively also at McKinsey Times. And I was really excited at what Raisin does, because so I've worked for a long time, obviously, in financial services even beforehand. And I really loved the fact that the way the business model is set up, it creates really a win-win-win. So it creates huge value add for consumers because their money performs better, they get higher interest rates. On the other hand, we provide a huge benefit for the banks connected to the marketplace. They get retail funding, very high quality, very diversified. And in the middle, we are making a profit. So I really like how this is aligned interests across the board. And helping people basically build their wealth as they shouldn't exclusively rely on the public sector for that. So, yeah, I was really excited to join it. I think it was also a lot for me about the people next to the product. So a great team to work with. Yeah, so that was why I joined there.
So, I mean, I was also working classic investment banking before I joined Baader Bank back at the time when all these fintechs were started. Didn't you fear any of the risks going now into a completely new founded company with an absolute, yeah, at that time, new business model where, I mean, could you just go into very short into the details what the business model was at the time for just the listeners that maybe don't know you?
Yeah. So what was and essentially still is the business model? So Raisin connects ultimately via a single interface savers with banks and their savings products. So think of it if you have a stock trading account at any given bank, you can access hundreds and thousands of stocks via that single account. But before Raisin, ultimately, if you want a savings account, you always need to switch the bank, right? Uh-huh. So if you like the product of your house bank, you can directly open it there. But if you feel someone else has a more attractive offer, you need to re-identify, go somewhere else, open a second account, uh-huh. and then manage them all. So ultimately, it's a marketplace. It also has a cross-border element. So theoretically, we have a single European capital market. In practice, we're not quite there yet. So opening a bank account, say, in Sweden or Italy, because maybe interest rates are higher, is not that simple. If you want to go direct, you need local language. Typically, uh-huh. they will ask you for local address, etc. So we basically said, let's remove all of those barriers and also allow cross-border investment. By now, it's no longer just cross-border. It can. We also have a lot uh-huh. of German banks, actually. Uh-huh. Did I worry about going there? So back then, and this is sort of way back when in 2014, Raisin had actually just closed their Series A of around 7.5 million. Uh-huh. Back then, that was a really big chunk of money. So I think then people sort of recalibrated and it rounds got a lot bigger. Now they're smaller again. But back then, that was actually a very solid amount of money so that it didn't feel like we were going to run out of money in the next 6 months or so. It's of course not something where you say, okay, the company is for sure going to exist for the next decade, but it was also a point in time in my life where I felt it was worth the risk. And I really believed in the product and the people building the product. So, uh-huh.
so something that you hear a lot when you talk to other founders or even the VCs and over the all industry, that it's much more about the people in most of the cases than just the product. So that perfectly aligns with what the others as well have stated so far. But what I really loved about the brand when it came to the market, basically you were tackling something where I would say the market was saturated overall because everyone had a savings account with his bank or her bank. Every bank was having an offer but the thing was that you aggregated it and made it just much more easier and cut out the hurdles in between changing from one bank to the other. And that was pretty innovative. And the other thing, of course, why this had to be a success, because the Germans love their savings accounts. I'm not sure if that business model would have been super successful in another first market than Germany. So
it is true. So Germany is an obvious market for it because they are so much more savers than investors on average. Nevertheless, actually in most markets, savings products, it's your entry product, uh-huh. right? So it's always the first product when you start building your wealth. You always uh-huh. start with a savings product. You always start with those couple of monthly salaries on an overnight account, even though it might not be called an overnight account, but have a different name. But structurally, savings is an extremely important asset class, actually globally.
That's true. If we follow up on that, are you allowed to talk about client numbers and how many you are serving at the moment?
So we typically don't talk so much about number of clients because there you always have all these discussions of what exactly mm-hmm. is a client and how do you True. Define them. We look a lot at assets on platform, as we call mm-hmm. it. So how much money is invested via our Raisin platforms. And there we're above 65 billion euros.
Mm-hmm. So I would assume that based on these numbers, you have a pretty good overview about what is going on in the landscape of, I would not say investors, but savers. So could you give us maybe some interesting insights into what the markets currently look like, what clients are seeking for, or if they close down maybe their accounts, where are they transferring money to? So is it going into real estate or crypto? Or I'm just curious about what you see there.
Yeah, so what we've seen is there's a bit almost sort of two different times for Raisin as a company. So more or less almost our entire first decade as a company until 2022, we were in a low to no interest rate environment. So interest rates, at least nominal interest rates, were extremely low. Mm-hmm. If you look at real interest rates, they were actually not that bad, historically speaking, because we also had a period of extremely low inflation. And then we reached that inflection point where inflation went up extremely fast, and then also interest rates went up extremely fast. And what we saw actually over the first decade of the low and no interest rate environment, a lot of people stopped caring. So they basically started putting huge amounts of money just into their current accounts, because they said, if I get 0% or 1%, it doesn't even matter. So I'll just leave the money lying around without earning interest. And then in COVID, we also saw, at least in Germany, quite a bit of a surge in terms of investment product activity. And there was quite a bit of a crypto hype. Uh-huh. But then we saw these record increases in interest rates. And that brought a whole group of people back to looking at savings products and caring at them. And we saw, especially last year, a record shift back into fixed rate products. So people really started putting money and relevant amounts of money back from their current accounts into savings products. And right now it will be interesting to see how people behave now. So we are heading towards at least an expected rate reduction cycle again. Although expectations aren't that rates will go down quite as much as they did the last decade. But we are at a flat, still slightly inverted yield curve. So what does that mean in layman's terms? Right now, you can get more money on overnight accounts sometimes than you can get on a fixed rate deposit. So we see actually quite a bit of money again going into overnight accounts, despite the fact that expectations are rates will go down. So now would actually be a good time to look at longer term products as well.
And it's also a good time to look at your company again, because, of course, you just said it and we all know it. The interest rates have been negative, and people were not paying so much attention about savings products, meaning about your core product. So you survived these tough times, and now you have just announced record numbers, and congratulations on that. So what's up next there, and what are you looking at?
So thanks for the congrats. So we're extremely proud as a team indeed. So last year for us was a record in a number of dimensions. So what we achieved was in parallel record growth while at the same time becoming profitable. So we typically look at operational profit, but even on a net profit basis, we were at slightly less than 1 million. So net, a bit less than 1 million was left at the end of the year, despite the fact that we actually grew our revenues by more than 90% last year as well.
Wow.
So we managed to really actually put our foot on growth and do this, however, in a profitable manner. So that's something that as a team we're extremely proud of. And obviously the plan is to continue down that trajectory of growth and of profitable growth. The second milestone we reached last year, and you alluded to it, right? So is this a German product? Because Germans are savers. So last year, more than 50% of our what we call net inflows, so of our growth, came from non-German markets. So we really by now are a company that is global. So we are also in the US, we're in the UK, we're in a lot of EU markets. So we're growing not just in Germany, but we're growing actually across the board and in a lot of other geographies as well.
And in terms of products, are you also seeking to further develop the product landscape and to transform more to investments? Because you just said the savings products is just the entry for most of the clients for their wealth. But at a certain point of time, they maybe want to diversify. And will you be a partner for that as well? Or are you aiming for that?
So in Germany, we already are. So in Germany, we offer a digital wealth manager, which basically provides wealth management products with underlying ETFs. So we're following our philosophy there of make it simple, make it very cost effective, so very low cost. We also have actually less well known. We have a crypto product. Same principle there. It's diversified. It's a note. So make it easy for people to enter. Make sure it's diversified. And that's definitely a philosophy we're looking at across the board. So we're starting from our home market, Germany, with it, but we are looking at what is relevant for customers or consumers to manage their wealth. We are on the investment side, so we don't see ourselves going into credit or current accounts or anything like that. So we do see ourselves as a platform that helps consumers manage their wealth and savings.
Quite an impressive journey you seem to have ahead for the next 10 years, we hope. And I'm sure that you will stay as well for the awards and be nominated in the awards again and maybe win again. So with regard to the fintech landscape overall, and FTGA tries as well to play a certain role there in the markets. In the press, there has been lately a lot of like fintech bashing, and that is at the moment so difficult in Germany, and that the fintechs have all or a lot of them had great goals and they were making lots of noise, but there are no proven KPIs and successes. So how do you see that at the moment? Is it really that bad as the press is pointing it out?
I would say absolutely not.
Great to hear.
So I continue to be a strong believer in fintech, and also looking at Germany. So in the end, the scene has grown up a bit, right? So on the one hand side, let's say the separation between fintech and bank has blurred, right? So a lot of the companies that have started out as a fintech now are a bank, have a banking license. In the case of Raisin, have bought a bank. So most of those companies that you used to call classic fintechs, they now actually are, legally speaking, banks as well, or own banks or have a license. A lot of them have also, they're now an important provider of jobs, right? So there's a relevant number of jobs that have been created in the industry. We have the first companies that are grown up in the sense of they've reached profitability. So Raisin is obviously one example. There are others that have reached the milestone or have declared they are about to or will soon reach it. And yes, has fintech gotten rid of banks completely? No, I don't. In the end, you need to have a very big goal and start with a big ambition and then adjust along the way. I think that's normal. And I believe it also has forced a lot of banks to rethink their digital journey. So I think the pressure that has come from a lot of fintechs has also put a lot of, let's say, a bit more innovation pressure on some of the traditional players. And yes, by now, I would say it's more it's an evolution of the ecosystem, right? There's a lot of partnerships also between fintechs and banks. But I still believe there is an important role to play for fintechs. And of course, yes, not all of them will survive, but that's inherent.
That's a normal thing in every ecosystem, every cycle. So it's nothing specific for fintech, right?
No, it's nothing specific for fintech. And again, right, when you have a lot of startups, a lot of them will not make it. That's the nature of the game.
So what would you say then, now that you have been in the industry, in the fintech space for a decade, what would you advise other fintech founders at the current stage if they are having a good idea or if they see a gap in the market and they want to make it a company? What advice would you give in terms of, I don't know, everything that could be interesting, like the capital raising or the founding team? So if you'd be a mentor, what would you say?
Yeah, so I think first one is resilience. So No matter when you found a startup company, it's a roller coaster ride, right? So there's lots of highs, but there's also a lot of lows. So you really need to be resilient to go through it. And this can come from all angles, right? It can be the key person that's leaving. It can be a regulation that pops up. It can be a macroeconomic situation that no one foresees that. So there's lots of curveballs you're going to be thrown as a founder. So I absolutely believe team is key, because if you have the right team, you will jointly make it through. And then what's obvious, I mean, we've seen this in the last 2-3 years, but I think it's a healthy one. We have come down from this growth at all cost back towards what I would call a somewhat more healthy. How do you get towards a profitable business model? And of course, you won't be profitable on day one when you found a new company. But having that path in mind is important. It should have always been important, but it has come more into focus again in the recent years.
And speaking of the ups and downs, what were the most challenging moments that you can think of at your time with Raisin?
Yeah, so it's difficult to really pick a single one, but I think it's a lot this, especially in the early days where you have just stuff changes every day, right? So something where you've worked towards for 4 months maybe, then all of a sudden is no longer relevant. Or if I look at the sort of decade I had in the first 2 years at Raisin, I spent 2 years onboarding a European servicing bank so that we could identify clients in non-German jurisdictions. And then I think it was 5 or 6 years later, I spent another year of my career migrating them towards Raisin Bank, right? So basically you spent another year unwinding something you spent 2 years doing earlier. So that's why you need to bring a bit that, let's say, emotional resilience of saying, okay, irrespective of what we've just done the last year or months, what's right now and what's right going forward? And also managing your own emotions, because stuff never goes right the first time, right? So you always, and that's, I would say, maybe one of the big changes versus consulting. In theory, it's completely clear what you should be doing.
Yes.
But then life happens, and sort of your great plan just needs a lot of adjusting and fine-tuning once it hits reality.
Yeah. I can perfectly relate to that, because, I mean, I'm in banking now for 15 years, and there's always that one client that manages to do something which everyone told you this is not going to be possible, be it from IT or from other angles. But there's always that one client that manages to, let's say, initiate bug A or bug B, and everyone is freaking out like, okay, how did this happen? Or in German, if you think of banking and trading, there are still these fax machines. And if there's a construction site on the highway and they dig too deep into the ground, and then the fax machine wires are cut for the whole block. And yeah, it's just crazy stuff. But I think resilience is a good skill that you need to build here. And talking about challenging things in the positive way, so what was one of the greatest moments at Raisin you have experienced, or what was an event where you have thrown the biggest party afterwards for the employees?
Yeah, so obviously right now is one of those moments in time. So I think after a decade showing we can operate profitable and we can grow, this is really, I would say, a bit of a culmination of more than a decade's work. Another huge highlight for me was the merger. So Raisin merged with Deposit Solutions. And for me, what was really impressive to see, and this comes back down to team, is within really days, the team managed to switch their brain from, we're a fierce competitor, so this is like the Apple and Microsoft, right? So we were in quite fierce competition for a number of years. And to go from, we're competing, to together we can achieve even greater things. And to see how fast really a couple of hundred people flipped that switch and started collaborating was really, really great to see. So I would say that's one of my other highlights.
But since the DNA basically was both fintech, I would assume that there was nothing like culture clashes or any kinds of things. Or
so cultures were different. So we had different corporate cultures. So because still, I mean, yes, it was all startup corporate culture, yes, but culture can still be different. And there were a couple of things that that were quite different between the companies. But nevertheless, sort of if you can find that common goal, that helps to align quite quickly and then to also overcome those differences.
Because you see that in the banking sphere with a lot of mergers, takeovers, be it Germany, Switzerland, or I mean, that's all over Europe. There you can see, okay, if one bank from 100 years and the other, which has been there as well in another market for 50 years and they merge, it takes sometimes a decade to get the cultures together. So this is why I asked and... was interested in the topic. So if we're talking about culture, there's one thing, and I'm sure you know that from your consulting career. Everyone says culture eats strategy for breakfast. How do you think of that? And how is the culture at Raisin, by the way? I mean, of course, we want to know about your company, and maybe we have some listeners in here that might say, okay, that sounds pretty interesting. Maybe I apply for a job there. So what's the culture at Raisin?
So I think in the end, there's a lot of truth to what you just said. So culture eats strategy for breakfast, because in the end, a company consists of people, right? And so it's extremely important. And I do think, and I truly believe, culture is what sets Raisin apart. And there's a couple of things that I personally really value and why I'm still here after a decade. And it's really a very transparent culture. So it's a very open communication between everyone in the team, but also in terms of the transparency we give towards the team in terms of numbers, things that are planned, priorities, etc. And on the other hand, what I really love, so whenever you have crises or problems, there's a culture to let's get it fixed rather than who's to blame. And I think that's something that's obviously extremely good to have, and is something that has helped us move forward and develop and evolve as a company, because whenever and stuff always goes wrong, there's always problems or challenges in every company, and that's really where the team comes together and everyone says, okay, what can I do, how can I help, how can I help my peers, and then yes, let's fix out afterwards how we can prevent this the next time. But I would say that's what really sets Raisin apart.
Okay, and if we're also talking about Gen Z and the new working environments and what we have seen, obviously, of course, I mean, you have been founded before COVID, and then you've gone through that phase as well. So has the new, I would say, new normal with working culture, working from home, or even working from abroad, has it made it easier for you to get people on board or more difficult? How do you see that? And what's your opinion on traditional perspectives?
So the old question of home office versus remote work. So at Raisin, we actually have a you pick and choose culture. And I would not just say Gen Z. So I'm clearly not Gen Z.
Yeah, me neither.
but I have two young kids. So I also don't work from the office 5 days of the week. And it has made my life incredibly easier compared to pre-COVID times.
Just and in if terms you're of- less stressed, then of course this reflects to the team and makes working more efficient, more easy, and more fun, I would assume as well.
Yeah, and I think it's for a lot of people just the added flexibility that it has brought has made it easier for a lot of people to combine the private and the work sphere in a manner that's more sustainable. And I really don't see this as a purely Gen Z topic. I personally do believe that it is still important to find those opportunities to bring the team together. So it does help. And yes, meeting in person is different to meeting via video. So there is just that different aspect to human interaction when it doesn't happen via a screen. So I'm personally still a big fan of making sure that you find those opportunities to bring the team together. It doesn't, for me, it's however not really important in terms of measuring this in a number of days. So even my team, if I was 5 days of the week in the office, half my team doesn't sit in Berlin. So basically, if I'm in the office and half my team is actually not, it still means remote interaction. So I think this is also something to keep in mind when you're a global company, that being in the office doesn't necessarily mean sitting with your team. So that's why I'm a huge fan of the remote work. Again, we are now in a stage where also a lot of things are somewhat more stable. So I can imagine, for example, if you're a startup that's starting from scratch, where the priorities shift every 2 days and there's so much movement, I can imagine that there is an advantage of sitting close together and having a bit that, so at Raisin it was a basement at the very outset.
Sharing a pizza at midnight.
and just making sure everyone's still up to speed on what's happening because things happen so fast.
What I have seen a lot after COVID was that, yes, everyone valued, again, being in person, but some companies really did miss to put a new governance on office work. And I mean, just telling a team, hey, be in the office for like 2 to 3 to 4 days, that's not the right thing, I would say. I mean, what if you have then your people in the office all the time or half of the team? And they are all sitting on video screens all day. So this is not the point where I think this is personal or interpersonal exchange. And many companies did not define rules for that. So what I think would also help if you have more guidance, especially in the bigger companies, that tells you, hey, guys, if you come to the office on your office days, make sure that you don't take so many video calls, because if you do, then of course you miss the opportunity to have the exchange with the colleagues, which on the other side frustrates the colleagues that just come to work, maybe travel for 1 hour in the morning, come to work and have no exchange because everyone else is just having video calls. So this is what I have experienced and where I would hopefully see a little more improvement in the future. Yeah. Okay. So in terms of the culture and how you're working there, is there any relevant openings you're currently having or anyone special you're seeking to employ?
So on my team specifically not, but we always have a number of positions open. So I would recommend to just check out our careers page. I think it's raisin.com.
We put that in the show notes as well.
Dash careers, yeah. So, but I would recommend to check it out. We always have a number of open positions. So feel free to apply.
Super. We will definitely put that in the show notes. One last question, maybe. With regards to the industry overall and the insights that you have, which trends would you see particularly relevant at the moment that should be solved in, yeah, let's say in the wealth and financial industry?
Yeah. So I think one is really this, I mean, it's a very global topic, but it's not fully solved yet. It's really helping a very broad set of consumers build wealth for their retirement. And I know wealth, when you translate it into German, is often seen as something negative. But in the end, helping people build the financial resources for retirement, because no one who's not retired yet right now should be relying on just purely the public pension contributions. On the other hand, I see also, so this is always, so we always keep debating about people that have the luxury of being able to put money on the side. I believe there's also a huge component still in terms of, let's call it, financial literacy, education. How do you help people take informed decisions, make sure that they don't end up in products that are extremely costly, that they don't end up in a loan trap and indebting themselves in a way that they shouldn't? And how do you help even people with very limited financial resources over time start start building some wealth on their end as well?
Yeah, I think this is important as well, because I see so many commercials on social media as well, where it's so easy if you're a young person to just consume, buy, and, you know, the buy now, pay later trap. And I think this is super dangerous. It's shown from the US how many people are there in their credit card loan vicious circles, right? So I would also see that this is an important topic. But why do you think it's so difficult for such companies to get funding? Because, I mean, it's an important topic, but who should be, or who must be in the stakeholders groups there? Because there were companies that were addressing these problems and they have not been able to get further funding, which is super sad. So how can we improve that?
Yes, I think there's two or three aspects to it. So one aspect is that we all tend to have an unconscious bias towards seeing ourselves as the customer. So it's always easier for us to relate to business propositions where we see ourselves as the customer. So that's that tends to be easier when it's about a wealth proposition compared to, let's say, challenges that exist on a side where people don't have any money, because that doesn't tend to be the reality of people giving the money or investing the money.
Fair point, yes.
And then there's obviously a second point, which is trickier, which is how do you then monetize? Because in the end, if people don't have any money, are those the people that you want to be charging? So how do you set up a business model in the end that that can work profitable? Or otherwise, how do you then set up, and that's then a very different construct, how do you then set up maybe a social business or something that has a sort of purpose that's maybe not for profit, but maybe then that's the route to go also in a number of places, right? So I think that's also not a trivial question to answer in doubt.
Okay. So we're keeping fingers crossed that, again, people are still addressing these issues, trying to solve these things as well. And I'm super happy that Raisin, as one of the companies, also solving a problem or serving the need for wealth building and digitization really, really helps customers in the markets, and has now turned to profitability after a decade, showing that the fintech space is not as bad as the press currently relates to it. And I'm super happy that we had this conversation. Katharina, thank you for being a guest today on our podcast, and hopefully we are seeing you again on the awards.
Thank you, Alexandra, and yes, hope to see you at the next awards.
Anything last you want to say to our listeners?
No, I think we've got it all covered.
Okay, great. So everyone who wants to work at Raisin or wants to invest there, so please check out the website. And thank you for listening today to this episode of the FinTech Germany Award podcast, enabled by Financial Times. All further information can be found in the show notes.